Almighty and merciful God, from whom comes all counsel, wisdom, and understanding, we humbly ask you to guide and assist us in our deliberations and in our work. May all our efforts be directed to the welfare and good of our community and our country. May we act honorably in pursuit of true justice for all our people, now and for the future, and for generations still to come. Amen.
Meeting of Parliament, Wednesday, 18th of January 2017. Order of proceedings. Confirmation of minutes. The minutes of the last meeting of Parliament, which was held on the 20th, 21st, and 22nd of December 2016. May I sign the minutes as correct? Communications from the Chair. Petitions. Announcements. Papers to be laid. The Honourable the Chief Minister.
Mr. Speaker, I have the honour to lay on the table the Gibraltar Annual Policy Plan for 2016 and 2017 and the Annual Report of the Gibraltar Police Authority for the year ended the 31st of March 2016.
Order to lie. Report of committees. Answers to all questions. We commence with question number 82 of 2017, the Honourable R.M. Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, can the government advise whether PwC have completed any audits for Credit Finance Company Limited?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Economic Development, Telecommunications and the GSP.
Speaker, I will answer this question together with questions 83 to 87.
Question number 83, the Honourable Iron Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, can the government please advise the total gross debt, aggregate debt after application of the sinking funds of gross debt, cash reserves, and net debt figures for public debt in the following date being the 1st of December 2016?
Question number 84, the Honourable Iron Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, can the government please advise the total liquid reserves figure and its constituents, mainly consolidated funds, improvements and development funds, government owned companies, deposits, contingencies, and other funds, the following date being the 4th of December 2016.
Question number 85, the Honourable Alan Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, can the government please advise how certain liquid reserves are invested held, giving details of all bank savings, bank accounts, and cash flows for the following date being the 1st of December 2016.
Question number 86, the Honourable Iron Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, can the government please provide a statement as to its financial performance by individual heads of revenue and expenditure as compared to the 2016-17 approved estimate for the 6-month period the 30th of September 2016, including government authorities and agencies.
Question number 87, the Honourable Iron Clinton.
Mr. Speaker, can the government please advise all companies, with the exception of Active Grid Limited, in which it or the Dwarfy Development Corporation have a joint venture interest and demands to value that interest and the percentage of the joint venture company owned.
I answer the Honourable the Minister for Economic Development, Telecommunications and the GST.
Mr. Speaker, the PWC audit is still ongoing. The position of regard total liquid asset composition, when, where, and how these are invested on a particular date, taken by the member opposite, continues to be as previously stated. The position of the public debt on the 1st of December 2016 is as it was estimated on the 1st of November 2016, except that the cash reserves are now, where then, sorry, £79 million and the net debt was £367 million. As regards the estimate of revenue and expenditure for the first 6 months of the current financial year, which I volunteered to provide to the Honourable Member, I can confirm that I will provide them to the Honourable Member during the course of the month. As previously stated, these half-year figures cannot be interpreted as indicating what the full-year result will be. There are no other joint ventures than the one mentioned in the question.
Mr. Speaker, I can't believe the Honourable Member to respond. I'd like to ask you, in terms of the audit of credit files, when it is ongoing, could we advise for which banks it is ongoing?
For all the financial years for which they're being undertaken. I think they're being undertaken for all the years since it started, because none of them have been done so far. So we'll get them all together, I imagine.
Mr. Speaker, I'm sure the Honourable Member is aware audits are usually done on an annual rotation, and you expect the audit reports to be signed within a respect month of the year end. Are there any issues that PwC have identified that are delaying the audit? Or is there a delay, or is this actually a planned process whereby 4 or 5 years are done in one go?
It's not planned to be done every 5 years in one go, although we've been doing more than 5 years in a row because we inherited 15 years of each government when none were done. So, you know, by this standard, 5 years is one third of the time.
And this is completely for that predictable reply. But would you not agree that this company is also incorporated under his watch, and therefore he has had complete control over the management and the finance of this entity, and therefore would you not wish the audit to be at least completed on an annual basis?
Yes, I would wish it to be done on a basis, but this is what it's taken. I mean, I don't know whether it is that accountants and auditors have the same practice as lawyers, which usually is that the longer they take, the more they charge. But all I can say is the sooner I have it, the better, the happier it is.
I think I would perhaps advise you, the Honourable Member, to make sure he reads the audit to you in advance so we don't make it landed with a big bill. And I think it goes to the accounts when they are prepared. Mr. Speaker, I know I turned to respond to question 86, in which the Honourable Member has finally agreed to provide information, and I understand that it says when it doesn't necessarily mean that it is on a pro rata basis reflective of what the end of the year results will be able to tie the issues. In what way did you hope to get the information to me? Given that this is a question that I think I'm asking in this house, I would reflect that this is reflected in Minister, I think.
This is the same day as I get it, and I will deliver it to him. Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, if I may address you, how would you get this information to myself?
there is no way in which a private communication between a minister and the honourable member of the question, there is no way in which it can be entered into the handset. It can only be entered into the handset if the information is provided here in Parliament.
Mr. Speaker, would it perhaps then be, and I excuse my little bit of English in this way of saying it, more correct perhaps to wait to February when the Honourable Minister will have the information to hand and to provide it in this House?
If the Minister is prepared to provide the information here in the House, I can be liberal in allowing a question to be put by the Honourable Member that will enable the Minister to make the information available here. It's up to him.
I'm not sure why he's so keen to have it in the House, Mr. Speaker, but I used to get it the way I proposed to provide it to him, that the government was ready. The Chief Minister's Office used to send me a letter with the information. Yeah. And when I get it, I'm ready. I'm prepared to give it to him as soon as I get it. The other thing is, well, is receive what he's already got here.
And that, whether it's in the handset or not, that does not stop the Honourable Member from making use of it subsequently, either by way of asking further questions or by referring to that information in the course of any debate.
That I'm not saying that I'm providing it to him confidentially and I cannot make use of it. I'm just providing it in the most convenient way. I think on that basis, then I would be fine allowing you to say as long as you refer to it in the past later on. I look forward to receiving information as before. If I ask, in his experience, not having seen the previous presentation information he needs to receive, what level of detail would this information be? Would it be just set by number or would there be a breakdown?
It's the
summary of getting the estimate by head of expenditure. That is what I used to get. And in fact, the expenditure, you can then see which head, if a lot of money has been spent on that head at the beginning of the year, then you're almost having to be overspending in that head, because usually it can be at less than 50% by 50% of the year. Mr. Speaker, I'm very grateful to the Honourable Minister and all the staff for receiving this much in detail.
Question number 88, the Honourable D.A. Peaton.
Mr. Speaker, is the government planning to introduce any efficiency measures within the DHA?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Economic Development, Telecommunications and the GST.
Speaker, I will answer this question with question 89.
Question number 89, the Honourable D.A. Peaton.
Does the government intend to change the employment status of frontier workers employed directly by the GHA as nurses in short-term contracts from direct employment by the GHA to placement via the services of a recruitment consultant?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Economic Development, Telecommunications and the GST.
Speaker, the Minister for Economic Development is responsible for identifying potential efficiency measures throughout the public sector, which includes DHA. As regards contract workers in DHA, no one is being changed from being an employee of the authority to being an employee of a consultant.
Mr. Speaker, what he has said is that his department is responsible for efficiency, and we all know that. But does his department or the minister plan to introduce any efficiency in relation to the DHA?
Well,
The plan is to introduce the methods that are identified as producing greater efficiency in the use of existing resources, whether it's in the DHA or anywhere else. It isn't that there is a different policy for the DHA from what is being applied in the rest of the public service. And as I think I said before, you know, I welcome any ideas that others may have that will lead to a more efficient use of public funds.
And may I ask the Minister, where is he with the plan to introduce possible efficiencies? I mean, is this at drawing board stage? Have we been able to identify areas already where there are going to be efficiencies? Has he sat down with the employees and with management in order to consider whether there are any efficiencies to be made? If you can give me more information in relation to where we are at with that potential plan, I'd appreciate it.
I'm already having monthly meetings with the unions, the different unions. I'm happy to report that, you know, they've been very cooperative today. And once I explained to them what it was, and they got over the initial anxiety. And I've asked them, in fact, to involve their membership, because I actually believe that the people who are doing the job are the people who are best placed to tell us whether the way they're doing it is the most efficient way of doing it or not, particularly because there is a tendency, I think, in any organization, and certainly in government organizations, that things are initiated, and unless somebody comes back and says, we don't need to be doing that anymore because it's no longer relevant, people tend to keep on doing the same thing or doing it in the same way until a new instruction is needed to stop it. So the whole idea is that we've already started on the process of getting a feedback where, I mean, for example, I've been told of particular things that happen in the preparation of the estimates and in the presentation of them to the House and in the work that the Treasury has to be done. And this has come from the union, not from the management, where they said to me that involves a lot of man hours being expended on doing something that would save resources if we found a way of getting to the same result without doing it in the way that it's being done, and that is one example. I will not be making public specific things that we do, but what I hope is that the results will be seen in the money that we need to spend as the financial year progresses and as the new estimates are brought in. Because the whole idea is, as I already explained to the union, is that what I'm looking for is that improvement in the service that we provide, or the additional services that are provided, should be achieved by better use of existing resources, rather than the expectation that every year there will be an automatic increase in money levels or an automatic increase in the provision of funds. And that is really, if this succeeds, it will succeed in us being able to take on the responsibility of delivering things within the resources that we've got, because we're using the resources that we've
got. In terms of the plan for efficiency, and as I understand it, that's an ongoing situation, and it's not definite at the present moment because he's still talking to employees and he's spoken to the union. When do you think that he will be in a position to have that plan, or list of action that he thinks that needs to be taken, and will that then be presented? And will that then be presented to the unions and to the employees before the plan of action is executed, or is this on the go, effectively live plan of action?
It's going to be a permanent thing. It's not that we've got a plan and then we say that plan and then it's finished and then there's no more efficiency we need it. But it's okay. On a daily basis, we will be introducing changes that people suggest to us or that we ourselves think can be applied on having first done an exercise to make sure that the effect of the change will not be that we finish up paying more for what we are doing than before, clearly, because the whole idea is to be able to make savings in order that we're able to do things within the budget and the money levels that we've got today. And therefore, if it succeeds, it will be seen to be succeeding, because that is a position that members will find when they're being asked to approve funds in this parliament. If that is succeed, then members will see us having to come back and ask for more money or ask for more manpower in order to deliver things, because we've not been able to achieve efficiency. Now, they were persuaded, Mr. Speaker, they may say so, that the efficiencies potentially were there before I was asked to do something about it. So, you know, presumably, if they have got a plan and they're willing to share it with me, I'd be happy to look at it.
Mr. Speaker, of course, success is measured by much more than just simply money. It's also measured by the delivery of service, and we would hope that the delivery of service is not actually affected by the efficiency. But that is not what I am. But that is not the next question that I am going to ask. The on current predictions, at the moment, we're spending over £100 million annually in relation to health. My understanding of the situation is if we postpone cost increases for the future, we would have rapidly got to about £120 million annually. That's £10 million per month spending on health. Does the honourable gentleman hope to have a decrease in the amount that we're spending, or does he hope to have a situation where there is effectively a freeze on any projected future increases of the amount that we spend?
We will have an opportunity to debate the estimates and the estimates of the Senate government, but certainly, in terms of the size of the budget, the efficiency is not necessarily going to lead to a smaller budget, but it can lead to a situation where, with the same budget and without a further increase, we are able to do more things or, you know, provide the services to more people. So, in fact, let me say that in terms of the introduction that he made, if there was a decline in the service to the public or a decline in the service to the user, there wouldn't be any efficiency involved. Efficiency by definition means that you're delivering at least the same as you were before at a lower cost, or that you're delivering more at no higher cost. But as I said, you know, there will be a process of identifying things, and that will be reflected in the results that we achieve. And it is true that the health service grows substantially, and has grown substantially in the term of office that we were here. I think you know, I think it's important to recognize that the service that we want to provide is one which meets all the needs of our community, but that if one particular department keeps on growing faster than anything else, eventually we don't have to be working in that department. But for the sake of comparison, let me say that, in fact, in percentage terms, the increase in the first 8 years of the DSLT administration between 88 and 96 was greater than anything we've seen recently, because we actually went from 8 million to 20 million. So we actually increased the budget of the health service 2.5 times in those 8 years. And we certainly haven't done that this time, because otherwise we would now be in the 300 million area. But, you know, I would hope that given the concerns that members opposite have previously expressed about the prudential use of public resources, that I would enjoy their support in the effort that I'm going to make.
I intend to say that, of course, we are not looking into specific details which are well outside the ambit of the original question. Simple responsibility of the minister, to what extent he opens himself to further supplementary, but I also have a responsibility to try to keep the matter within reasonable control.
Mr. Speaker, turning to the second question, the one about the change of employment status of frontier workers. And the position at the moment is there is a substantial number of frontier workers that work as particularly nurses at the hospital. A lot of those are on short-term contracts. Although they're on short-term contracts, not permanent and pensioners, if I can call it that, although they're on short-term contracts, would the Honourable Chief Minister want to say something? I'll give way to him.
Gentlemen, I'm giving way to you. I'm having a conversation with members of the state. I'm happy to have the time to continue.
Well, thank you very much. You can continue to do this. There are a substantial number of these nurses, my understanding is, on short-term contracts. But short-term contracts are in themselves also recurrent expenditure. I mean, it says recurrent expenditure. Now, is there a plan from the government to reduce recurrent expenditure by effectively reducing those frontier workers in short-term contracts working at the hospital, and then allow them to be re-engaged via recruitment consultants, which would then, of course, basically substantially reduce, potentially, the recurrent expenditure burden on the government on the VHA in this case?
The Honourable Member knows I'm always happy to answer his question, but all he's done is ask the original question in different words. And the answer is already here.
Mr. Speaker, I'm very grateful to Ms. intervention with respect to public efficiency. Can I ask you, is this review purely internal, or I know you have no other consultants, but is there any plan to bring in any particular experts in the field of healthcare in terms of identify any greater efficiencies or ways or management systems that might produce not just a financial outcome but also a positive healthcare outcome?
Well, I'm glad to share with you that I share with the Honourable Member, I share the same view of consultants. In my experience, they tend to cost more than the savings that they produce. So there's no improvement in efficiency. No, I think the experts are the people working in the system. Clearly, you know, what we want to do requires their cooperation, and I send a very clear message that this is in the interest of everybody because we're all taxpayers and we're all consumers of the service. And this is not about making people work harder, but making people work better, so that, you know, the things that don't need to be done, we stop doing, or the things that are being done in ways that may require more effort, which is unnecessary, are done. So it's more an organizational thing than, you know, than doing it. At the same time, you know, we're going to be looking logically at the way we procure things, because all those things are also, and they are not exclusively within the workload of the department in the sense of delivering the service to the customer, where the service is consumed at the point of delivery. You know, if we are, for example, a number of different outfits doing more or less the same thing, we may find that it's more efficient to do it. In my own department, member will see that I am making some changes in the structure of my department. You know, although my budget never goes up, nevertheless, I believe in leading by example. So I'm making some savings in my department, and that will be reflected in the estimate. So where it has an impact on the way the work is organized, members will see it. There may be lots of small things that change, but at the end of the day, the cumulative effect of those changes hopefully will lead to a situation where Parliament has the satisfaction of hearing that, you know, more is being done for the same amount of money that is being voted, and that is really part of the role that we have, whichever side of the House we're on.
We now move to question number one of 2007. The questioner is the Honourable E.J. Hedges.
Following on from answers provided to question numbers 732 of 2016 and 842 of 2016, can the Minister for Sport update the House in respect of the two vacancies within the Board of Sport and Media and Authority?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, the selection process for the Centre Manager Grade 5 vacancy was undertaken in late December 2016. The successful candidate has been informed and will start official duty in the new role on the 1st of February 2017. The interview board for Assistant Resource Manager Grade 4 will be undertaken in the very near future.
In this situation, we now know that the grade 5, where the Minister has indicated last night, would be taking place shortly. We now know that the successful candidate due to take place in the 4th of February. But in December, in respect of the other post, the assistant government post, the Minister said that he expected to hold interviews for the selection board meeting January 2017. We're now halfway between January 2017. Not a system in a day since they were certainly. Is it outside the scope of January now, or does it mean January, but just in other words, the way it does it?
Mr. Speaker, knowing the efficiency of the DSLA management, I'm sure that they will be doing it during January, if not the first week in February. But the honourable member must understand that this is ongoing, ongoing moving vacancy, and it's been done in a very efficient way. So, what I would suggest is that if they have indicated to me in the near future for the DSLA, in the near future could be a couple of weeks.
So, thank you, Peter. One more thing I wanted to ask before, the successful candidate for the grade 5 post, was that an internal, was a successful candidate, or is it someone externally now moving into the DSLA?
No, Mr. Speaker, as is the norm, these vacancies are usually internal unless there is no suitable candidate, and then there could be looking for somebody else outside. But obviously, people who are SLOs, officers, they would like to be wanting to get the post, which is why it's like in being in the civil service. If you're an AO, you want to be an AO. So in this case, it's the same thing. It's all done internally, and they have been able to get a successful candidate.
So, Mr. Speaker, can the Minister confirm, I am right then in the introduction from there, that there will now be a set of agencies somewhere down the road, because somebody moving up to grade 5. And when will that vacancy be filled, and will it be just an internal process first? Or is it a such a low grade that, for example, that it just goes straight out to the public in the first place?
No, Mr. Speaker, because this is part and parcel of the whole structure of the DSLA. As the Honourable Member knows, we are still working with the unions and the workforce in the DSLA. What is the right manning level? So there might be, for example, people moving up and therefore the bottom. You might not need, because you might have to over above what we will need. So this is what the DSLA is currently doing. This is, as the Honourable Member knows, we started this structure with the management, and it's working all the way down. And it could well be that we might not need it, and it's part and parcel of probably the efficiency strategy, where you might not need an SLO or an SLA at the bottom of the line. But this is ongoing, again, as I said, the management, if people go up the ladder, and a manning level is agreed, that will be kept. And if at that point we need to go outside, we will be.
Question number two, the Honourable E.J. Hayes.
Can the Minister for Sport provide details of any further cancellations? Please the answer provided to question number 845 from 2016. Have any of the Gibraltar Sport and Leisure Authority's benefits due to the facilities being unfit for use, inclusive of reasons why the cancellations were necessary and the dates involved?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport. Mr. Speaker, since the answer provided to question 845-2016, there has been no further cancellations due to the 2015 and 15 years.
I'm not sure whether I can allow the Honourable Member to ask the same question as the Minister, given the answer to the question. When there is an ongoing process where information can change from one month to another, when we know when it is established that information can change from one month to another, I do allow the same question to be asked, essentially because the answer is going to be different, it's going to be an update. But in this case, you just cannot automatically rush out on the assumption that there may have been cancellations. Do you remember the point?
Yes, I'm quite content with that, and I concur with you. The reason why I posed this question was looking at the date of the December meeting and giving the answer, and seeing that some increment weather had occurred after that. You know, I posed in this question, keeping my fingers crossed that we would sort of see my genuine lesson that giving up the information. The Minister was able to provide last time information as up to the date when the answer was tabled in this Parliament. But because there have been any weather, or there have been bad weather since then, I was just asking, I'm telling you, Peter, unless something drastic would be, we've all hoped in this house, does not happen again, then there will be no need for me to put the question. I know there are occasionally sort of minor cancellations due to some minor work. The reason for putting the question in December is that the Minister explained exactly that. You know, it was a rather big job from something that you know, does not happen that bad weather, does not happen naturally every month. So I don't think the speaker should I have a lead what I was doing via the class, I would contact you and say to the speaker, you know, what do you think is correct in that case. But there's no need for us to have any disagreement with this matter. We're both on the same wavelength.
Question 3, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
Mr. Speaker, can the government explain why the installed exercise equipment adjacent to Albert Rousseau House has been fenced off and made inaccessible for a period of 4 years?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, the exercise equipment adjacent to Albert Rousseau House has neither been fenced off or made inaccessible for a period of 4 years, as the Honourable Member asserts in his question. The exercise equipment was installed by the Gibraltar Sports and Leisure Authority in May 2015 at the request of a resident. The area is used on a daily basis by those who reside there. A gate controls access to the area to avoid unauthorized entry, thus reducing the possibility of damage by instances of vandalism, etc.
I walk past that gate every single morning. It is locked with a bolt, Mr. Speaker. It is inaccessible. I'd like an explanation as to why the residents of Rousseau House are not allowed to access that. Surely it's in the interest of our elderly to have it available to them in that area, which means they can put that for their use and for their health and welfare. And to promote that. It is inaccessible. I've walked past that area. I walk my dog every single morning at 7 o'clock, and it is inaccessible.
Mr. Speaker, he might walk with his dog every morning and it might be locked. That does not mean that a resident, of which the residents, what they do is they want to use it. There is a caretaker where they can get the key, open the place, and probably somebody goes and helps them to open the place in order to use the facilities. So I've just answered that in saying that he, when he walks his dog, it might be closed, but he obviously has not gone when somebody is using it.
So it is a question of the management there, having the fee, the people who are in the residence there and inside there go to the management, say, can I have the fee? I want to do my exercise. They go, they open the gate, they use it, and then they close it again. So because of instances of damages of vandalism. So the honourable member might walk his dog in front of the gate every day and find it closed, it doesn't mean it's not being used. The residents have access to it when they want to use it. And all I have to do is go to the janitor or the caretaker, get the key, open the place, use it, and then close it up again.
Question number four, the Honourable E.J. Phillips.
So the county government provides details of maintenance programmes in the place in respect to the floodlights and training pictures at Victoria Stadium.
Answer the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, the devolved Sports and Leisure Authority has a maintenance contract with a local electrical contractor, which includes quarterly maintenance checks, including periodic replacement of fittings as and when necessary. In addition, there is an agreed call-out service for emergency and ad hoc repairs or replacements.
Mr. Speaker, is the Honourable Minister aware? As you know, I'm regular, I frequent that area 3 times a week. And for the last 3 months, lights have been inoperative at pitch number 3 and 4, and have been low level lighting from 2 of the 6 that operate each pitch. And that has, you know, in terms of periodical attendance, there's clearly been a failing there. But is he aware of any of those particular failings and the lack of lighting in the evenings for children quickly?
Mr. Speaker, I am not aware, but the Honourable Member must be made aware that at times the floodlights cannot be on, and we have the issue with the parking, where, remember, we are just beside an airport, and the Honourable Member who works on that must know that if the American lands at a given time, the lights have to be put off. So it could well be the case that when the children were trained and all that, airplanes were landing or were scheduled to land, and therefore the lights were not on. And they might put some dimmer lights in order for training to continue. But I can assure the member, like I just said, that there is a maintenance program, and the maintenance program is that if they are not working, they are fixed. So it's not, it cannot be the case that you go there training and if they're not working, there's a call out system, somebody comes and fixes it. Might take an hour, might take half an hour. Maybe that session might have been cancelled. But the Honourable Member must understand that these are things that if they happen, they will be fixed as soon as it is possible. But I can assure the Honourable Member that there has not been any cancellation of allocation as far as the previous question to do with the stadium inside and outside is the same case, if not, they would have informed me.
In relation to the instance, just to clarify the instance that I'm referring to, within moments of this question being filed, it was fixed. So obviously, it's effective. We made a complaint, or I may raise the question, it alarmed the individual concerned, maybe your office, and the contractors fixed the light. But it did take a number of complaints from parents to approach me as well to have the lights replaced. It's not a question of landing, it's like landing, Mr. Speaker. If the question is then just not being replaced within a reasonable period of time. It took parents to complain several times and a question to remedy the situation.
Well, Mr. Speaker, I do not agree with him that it has to be 3 parents going to complain in order for it to be fixed. That is not the case. If the parents complain, fine, they complain, but even if they hadn't complained, the management would have realized that the lights are down. And they would have done the call, and people would have fixed it. So if it's not a question of going to face, finally, if you want to complain, complain. You have going to complain. You don't even have to complain. You just probably have to inform them and say, look, the lights are out. Can you please have someone to, and as the honourable member said, within a certain period of time, short period of time, it was fixed. So I don't know what the issue is, Mr. Speaker.
Question number 5, the Honourable R.M. Clinton.
Speaker, can the government buy the net cost of the 2015 Gibraltar Music Festival?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sport.
Mr. Speaker, before details of payments and income generated from the 2016 Gibraltar Music Festival has not been finalised. Government will be publishing full details once it has been finalised.
Mr. Speaker, given that this is a multi-million pound event, I find it surprising that the Minister, in pretty much the same day as last year, responded that he has not yet had the figures available. This is an event that was held in September last year, and somehow I will ask the Minister whether he thinks it's acceptable that his department is unable to tell him whether they paid a profit or a loss.
Mr. Speaker, it's because this event is a multi-million pound event that finalising the accounts in a way that we can give figures in this house, which are ones that we can rely on, which can then be on hindsight and which can then, on the subject of today, take longer than the Honourable Gentleman might wish. The event took place in September, that is last year, of course, but it is 4 months into last year, it is not 12 months into last year. The figures, as the Honourable Gentleman has said, will be available shortly, and the statement will be made reflecting those precise, detailed, and accurate figures. That is the sort of figure that I would have thought the Honourable Gentleman would want to see us bring into this house. I don't mean to say that we don't have an idea of what the figures are, that we don't know what the ballpark of those figures are, and we don't know what the budget of it was, and that there's been strict control of that to ensure that it comes in as close as possible as any event to the budget. Those figures will be made public as soon as they are available. Mr. Speaker, I would ask the Minister to give an undertaking to this House that he will have those figures presented to us by no later than the end of March, before we get handed the budget book, and then we'll see to answer questions in the House. Mr. Speaker, we will give no such undertaking. What we will do is to prudently deal with the finances of Gibraltar we have been doing until now, and provide a statement of the Honourable Gentleman's place as soon as the figures are ready. And Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Gentleman should have now known, he's been here for one cycle already, that the first of April is a new financial year, that the government works for that new financial year, that he will have his estimate during the course of April, that he will not be able to refer to anything in the budget debate, but that he will have them, and that will give him a forecast outturn for the year before. The Honourable Gentleman asked for undertakings. He needs to understand what he's asking for, and he needs to understand that it is not relevant to the sort of arguments we're having today. The government is allowed to figure this stuff out of the front center. And if you speak about the Chief Minister of Intervention, naturally he is not really shed any light on the matter. I've asked the Minister again, he must have some idea, or as the Chief Minister himself just said, some kind of ballpark figure in his head. And I'm willing to accept that it may not be entirely accurate. Would you be willing to share with his head what that ballpark figure is? Mr. Speaker, I couldn't disagree more with the Honourable Gentleman. I've shed a lot of light on the issue. I've made clear what it is that the government is doing in respect of these figures and how they will be available. I've also indicated to him that at the very least, he will have the forecast out from the air, so it's very likely before then, he will have the detailed statement that he's requesting in the context of the statement that the government will make. But Mr. Speaker, this is not a place when people are going to be given ballpark figures. This is a place where they're going to be given precise figures that can be relied on, and we will not be faced into giving those ballpark figures. But I will tell him this, Mr. Speaker. If you want a ballpark, better referred to as an estimate, and Mr. Speaker, all you need to do is open the relevant page of the estimate book and you'll know what the ballpark was. He's had it for a year. Today, Mr. Speaker, if I understand the Chief Minister correctly, he is saying a ballpark basis that he expects the music festival of 2016 to come in at least at a loss of £500,000. Would I be correct in saying that? Mr. Speaker, I don't know which remarks I know that the Honourable Gentleman heard that might have led him to that conclusion. But what I have said is that he should go to the estimate book and see what the estimate estimate was for this year, and that is the only legitimate ballpark that he can refer to. Mr. Speaker, at the risk of firing a patient, the ballpark loss, not loss of £500,000 I refer to, came precisely from the estimate book he was so fond of. So again, I asked him, does he confirm that in his view there would be at least a loss of £500,000 in the fiscal 2015? Mr. Speaker, although he's been here already for a full cycle, he doesn't seem to get it. The estimate book contains the forecast outline for the year before, which is where he's getting that figure from, and it contains the estimate for this year. What I'm saying to him is in the context of asking for a ballpark, aka an estimate of what the festival has cost this year, we gave him in April last year a book that said, this is what it cost last year, and this is the net cost of the tax, and this is what it's going to cost next year. Speaker, we have that information now for almost a year, and the Labour team will have looked at it. That is the ballpark that he can refer to, and so there is a detailed statement that tells him exactly every penny that has been spent, how much was recovered, and how much was not recovered. But, Speaker, it's becoming increasingly clear to me, not that only 6 months since his statement last year, but he is an enemy of the Gibraltar Music Festival. He doesn't believe that he should be holding a Gibraltar Music Festival, and he's probably therefore not going to want to congratulate the government for the magnificent deal that we have been able to do with MTV, which has been ushered in by the Minister for Culture, with the former Minister for Tourism, Samantha Sacramento, doing a considerable amount of work, which is now going to produce for Gibraltar in the context of the music festival this year, the advertising value that will be measured in many millions of pounds, because we're going to benefit from exposure on MTV and the advertising of the Gibraltar tourist product around the world, not just in MTV in the United Kingdom, in MTV Europe, but also on MTV channels and derivative channels in the United States and around the world. So, Mr. Speaker, I could not disagree more with every aspect of the premise of the question, in particular, his enmity for the Gibraltar Music Festival. Mr. Speaker, a wonderful speech. I have no particular aversion to music or even to the music festival. What I have an aversion to, Mr. Speaker, is the misuse of taxpayers' money, in which last year they blew £2.25 million on the music festival, and this last year they were due to blow £500,000 on the music festival. But he can't tell us how much was actually spent. So, Mr. Speaker, I will wait for the Honourable Mr. Bassano's half year numbers to September, and hopefully they will include those numbers. But in the meantime, Mr. Speaker, I would ask the Chief Minister to perhaps really invest a little more time and effort in getting the music festival to make a profit. It doesn't, Mr. Speaker, but the Honourable Gentleman clearly cannot make a speech without having a response. Mr. Speaker, the idea that the government blows anything is really quite preposterous and unbefitting a member of this House, Mr. Speaker. The idea that the Gibraltar Music Festival is the government blowing taxpayers' money doesn't just betray that the Honourable Gentleman is against the organisation of the Gibraltar Music Festival. It betrays that he must therefore consciously be against any spending whatsoever on any matter of culture. Or is it that if the government sponsors a classical concert in the sum of £1,000, and you don't recover £1,000, that is not blowing £1,000 on a concert. But if the government invests in an event which entertains 13,000 people, which attracts people to Gibraltar, which provides an opportunity for businesses in Gibraltar to bring their international board to Gibraltar, and which projects the image of Gibraltar abroad, then we are blowing taxpayers' money. Mr. Speaker, I could not consider that the Honourable Gentleman has failed in his duty to the people of Gibraltar more than in the context of what he has said today. Look, it's perfectly proper to look at the detail of every penny that was spent, and ensure that it is being spent in a manner that is appropriate and that is value for money. But from that to the statement that the Honourable Gentleman has made now, I think there is just a headline-grabbing attempt by somebody who has failed to demonstrate any imagination whatsoever in the time that he has been here in the context of the way that we invest in culture in our community and how we project the image of Gibraltar abroad. And I must say to Mr. Speaker, I must say to Mr. Speaker, it would be a pity indeed if you ever had an opportunity to get his hands on the purse strings of Gibraltar and did not continue to organize events such as the Gibraltar Music Festival. We would go back to the desert that Gibraltar was under the GOC when it came to these issues. We would go back to the desert of events for our young people, the desert of culture that Gibraltar was becoming under the GOC. And I'm very happy and very proud of the work that we've done on the Gibraltar Music Festival and now in particular our alliance with MTV.
I am not going to allow for the rest of this session exchanges of that nature or oral orders of that nature. I warn honourable members, they know the attitude that I'm going to take. I made a statement at the beginning of the summer precisely as to how I was going to do this question time. But the honourable questioner invited that kind of response from the Chief Minister. So that's why he's getting it. But I'm not going to allow any further exchanges of that nature. We move on to the next question.
Question number 6, the Honourable Ms. M.D. Hassan-Naun.
Mr. Speaker, this question may come as a little outdated given yesterday's press conference and the upcoming alliance with MTV, but I have to ask it anyway. Can the government confirm or deny whether there are plans to move the production and organization of the GMF from our local setup to MTV?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and Sports.
Mr. Speaker, as announced yesterday in the press release, HMGOG has signed an agreement with MTV as a media partner for a 2017 Gibraltar Music Festival. The Honourable Lady will give way. The government respects the convention that if a question is put in a matter that the government has not yet acted upon, the government would not act upon it until we answered the question. And so the Honourable Lady has asked about something which is local and we have not somehow programmed already for some other reason and announced something at a particular date, then we would simply have waited and given the information to her in the Parliament. When I saw her question come in, I realise that in this instance we are going to be unable to do that because the announcement yesterday, as you may have seen from the media, involved members of the company that we refer to MTV having flown out to the board, having made the arrangements, and needing to move on to other things that they were going to announce elsewhere. And so, therefore, we were not able to respect the convention in this case, that we meant no flag of disrespect to having done so.
Speaker, may I just add that I've been looking at my emails, and in order to clarify all this, is that we started planning the press conference and the reception we did yesterday, way back on the 23rd of December. So it wasn't a thing that, you know, it came out of your question. We were already planning the actual date, and I've been looking at the emails. And we honed in to the 17th of January, way back on the 23rd of December.
Mr. Speaker, I thank the Chief and the Minister for support and level for their explanation. And no issue with that at all. If I may, a couple of supplementaries to this effect. Can I just ask, who would be the local agent or who would be the intermediary between government and MTV?
Well, Mr. Speaker, there is a company that works for or with MTV that does the production. MTV does the broadcasting or the television side, and then there is a company that works for MTV that does the production. But I can assure everybody in Gibraltar that most, if not all, the things that the GMS has previously done will be done by probably the same people or agencies that are local, because when MTV moves into, for example, Plymouth or moves into wherever they go, Malta, for example, what they do is they use the local expertise to do the actual production. They will not fly from London, say, stages, lights, sound, equipment. They will get it from where the locals have previously done. So what I can question of MTV taking over the DNA. This is an evolution. It's a completely different step that we're taking. MTV will come in and will use all the footage of DNA in order to, as the chief minister says, to broadcast the news in MTV in order to expose Gibraltar and put Gibraltar on the map in the question of music.
Thanks for that. May I just ask, can the government guarantee the same level of local contributions from our very own local bands and artists, or would this be down to MTV, or do we have control over such an inventory or schedule for the event?
Mr. Speaker, as I mentioned yesterday in the press release, DNS will continue to have the same concept that we had previously. It's been very successful. That is why MTV it took the attention of MTV itself. Of course, we're going to have local bands. In fact, I am pleased that we can have the local bands playing with MTV watching them and listening to them, which might give opportunities to our local bands to even become bigger. So we always say, and I'm convinced that the world is full of talent, and having MTV here with us and looking at and listening to our talent is a very, very big plus. So not only do, for example, bands in Gibraltar will now have to do their own marketing, but they will have MTV actually listening to them, seeing that, and maybe getting them on becoming big stars. So of course the local is going to be involved. Not only is it going to be involved in the music sector, but it's going to be involved in all the organizations. And also the concept of the DMS, which has been very successful, is the fact that it's a family. And I don't know whether the honourable member would like to come to it, but it's a very much of a family festival. And therefore, the whole community enjoys it, because you see parents, your clients, grandparents, aunties and uncles seeing and listening to different types of music. Music that I like from the 70s and 80s to what is current today. So that is what has attracted MTV, and MTV has realized the value of the DMS that we produce with the producers that we have done, and therefore the value is intense. And what they will do is, because they have different types of channels in which they have an MTV, which has the updates, the most current music of musicians that are coming, they also have panels for the rest of it. That means the bands that I might like that are around, and they will use that footage in another channel. So basically, whatever the DMS has done has drawn the attention of MTV, and they're quite happy to come to Gibraltar and really proud that they are coming here, and it's a great thing for Gibraltar. It's going to attract more people. The social media network that MTV has goes to the hundreds of millions of followers, and all that will be exposed in Gibraltar.
Mr. Speaker, thank you for that explanation. Are costs expected to go down as a result of this partnership?
Well, Mr. Speaker, there will be set budgets to the company. Will costs go down? In actual fact, it might do, and I'm convinced it will do, because of the artist. You see, when you have an independent Gibraltar music festival like we used to have, hiring an artist costs more, because the exposure of the artists are coming here for 1 week and then they go. Whilst with MTV, it is a completely different set of things, because they can attract artists for a better price, because the artist is exposed in MTV and it's promotion for them. So therefore, we will be able to get not only probably, I wouldn't say better, because the lineup that the DMS has had has been brilliant. I mean, MTV has actually said your lineup has been excellent, so they were really happy with the sort of lineup that we had. But now they can attract big stars coming here
for less money because of the exposure that they get on MTV. And the same will happen with all the other things around the MTV. Sponsorship, exposure, all these issues that can marketing the broadcast. So it pushes the GMS to another level.
Thank you. If I may, just one more question. Is the government confident that we have the resources in terms of hotels and catering to accommodate the expected rise in this event-led tourism for this festival?
Well, Mr. Speaker, if you will be honest, there are many, many events that we organize, like the darts, like the pool, like the whistle festival, the snooker. There are many, many events that we do. It is attracting the sort of tourists that we want. We are sort of beds, yes. We have about 700 beds available, and sometimes we get events that we can't handle. But it means that the hinterland will get the benefit. But that is why we are attracting or trying to get investors to do more hotels and more beds. Because the more events we do, and the more we are attracting people, it means we're going to be more successful, and therefore, the more beds we have, the better. That means that instead of the money goes elsewhere, it will come to the border. So yes, in a way, I mean, I've had proposals of people wanting to bring the Formula One here to the border. And so no, I mean, we wouldn't be able to handle that. There are many events that I get proposals for, and yes, the border cannot handle it. So what we're doing is, and you can see, the type of events that we've been attracting for the past 4 or 5 years are events that we can manage. Snooker, pool, darts, we attract 300, 400 people at the show. And this is what events are saving me.
If the government appoints any intermediaries or local agents, I understand what the minister has just said, that it will most likely be the people who've already worked with the GMS, which sounds about fair because they have been fostering this event and growing it. But if there are any new local agents, will that be by direct allocation, or will these positions start to tender?
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Lady must understand that this is a partnership with MTV, and it is MTV that then procures most of the things, of which most of it will be local, like I said. But it's not a question of the government having to go out to tender or anything. It's MTV that this is like a franchise, Mr. Speaker. When you have a franchise, you have quality control. MTV puts the quality control, and therefore it's MTV that contracts their companies. And anyway, the company that MTV is working with does this everywhere else. They go around doing the organization everywhere else. So it's MTV that decides, not us that decides who does it. And then those companies will get the locals to do all the other things.
Sorry, maybe I just don't understand, but if MTV is deciding, then we can't at the same time guarantee that it's going to be the same people.
Mr. Speaker, we put the people who were organizing the music festival and MTV together, and they're working very well together. They could fall out tomorrow and they may not do the festival together. But the government has voted MTV to do it for all of the reasons. The minister has indicated all of the reasons that I gave yesterday. But this is come to a commercial arrangement. So the other reason is to understand what you're saying to us. Look, there was a process by which people have been appointed for some time now and they've delivered a festival. But the people that they appointed below them were not sure. It's something that the government is responsible for or want to send before. So if they decided to have Mr. X sell hot dogs or Mr. Y sell hot dogs or Mr. F bring the stage or Mr. E bring the stage, that doesn't matter for them. The government has an agreement with them and they go to it. We now have an agreement with MTV. MTV will be delivering the festival. And of course, it makes sense that in the context of doing that, the people they will want to work with and who they already in contact with, etc., will be the ones who have been doing it until now. And they're already working together on that very system. And the logistical exercise will be one which will be harder for MTV to do without those who've been delivering that festival for the past 5 years than if they were good with. It's that simple. But what there is no replacement for in this equation is MTV. If the other gentleman has told you an interview, and just to put this in context, MTV UK has 2.8 million followers on Twitter and social media, which is one of the ways that they will be reaching out to people to advertise the broker and the product. In the United States, the president-elect, Donald Trump, has 19 million Twitter followers. The White House and the Office of the President of the United States each have 17 million Twitter followers. MTV has 48 million Twitter followers. Now, that is the reach into which we are buying for the Gibraltar brand and for the Gibraltar product at this time in our history when we're looking to open up new markets for Gibraltar. So that partnership will result in people being appointed in Gibraltar to do certain things. We've put it in touch with the people who were doing it first. They're working very well together until now, and we hope that that will be the way that it continues. But it is not possible for us to say that MTV are not able to contract in some part or in others with parties who have not provided service to the government of Gibraltar until now, and that they may be serious, and that will produce a saving for the taxpayer. The lady has been told that if we go out and contract artist X for September, artist X comes out with the cost of doing one concert. If MTV contracts artist X to do 10 concerts around the world, and one of them happens to be live in September, the cost of that artist in respect of the September gig, to use a kind of term of often used upon it, may be much lower, and therefore a huge benefit to the devoted taxpayer. That's what we need to be looking for here, the benefit for the taxpayer. And if we have a wider reach for the devoted product, and we potentially are able to bring some of the artists cost down also in that context, I think that's a very good thing. And in particular, when you layer on top of that, the exposure that local bands are going to have to the people from MTV who discover bands, etc., and the potential for those Gibraltar bands to form part of the product produced by MTV for its television station, where it's going to be like gold dust for a local band to have 30 seconds on an MTV program and expose themselves. There is nothing to do that here, there is everything to appear in my view.
Mr. Speaker, can the government tell us whether it is also taking any of the financial risk? Are there, for example, any guarantees in place in relation to the income that MTV will take from this, or are there any guarantees in relation to the expenditure that the government might share with MTV? Mr. Speaker, the government is unable to guarantee without coming to the House and asking for the permission of the House.
Mr. Speaker, with respect to you know the gist of my question, is the government taking any financial risk shared with MTV in relation to this particular event?
Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Minister is very clear. We have contracted MTV to deliver this product. There is no question of there being a joint financial risk in any way. There will be an estimate of what the concept is going to cost the government of Gibraltar, and that is going to be it. There's no question of the government guaranteeing anything within to do that might produce a financial risk to the government. It just does not arise. And that is why, Mr. Speaker, whether I catch the gist of his question or not, if he uses the word guarantee, I'm actually referring to the public finance legislation, which is that the government is unable to guarantee anything without having a resolution of the case.
Effectively, Mr. Speaker, what he is saying is that there's been a contract with MTV for a specific price, and then MTV take any risk over and above that specific contract price. Is my understanding correct?
Mr. Speaker, there is a contract with MTV. That contract with MTV and the arranger, which we've announced yesterday, is a contract for the organization of a concert and for the sourcing of artists. In exactly the same way, there was previously a contract with a local consortium that did exactly the same thing for us. So we are as at risk now as we were before. Mr. Speaker, I'm grateful for the administrative response there. Looking at the purpose, they can't try that with a partnership. But I might like to say that this is not in fact a partnership in the legal sense, and that this is a simple contractual relationship where party A can get party B to deliver a service. And can we advise the House 1 year this contract has been in place, and in terms of the administration of the concert, is it still the case that all the revenues of the concert will come to the government? The beginning of the same is a property, and that's the use of the word partnership, even a property, is not used in the legal terminology. So I can confirm to the House that the government of Gibraltar and MPD have not entered into a legal partnership under the Partnership Act. But we are describing our contractual relationship as a common, as a partnership. We have a rolling agreement that we review every year. We're not committed to any particular period, and the revenue of the country will be for the government.
Question number 7, the Honourable Ms. M.D. Hassan-Naun.
Has government made a decision on where the new stadium will be constructed?
Answer, the Honourable the Minister for Culture, the Media, Youth and...
Mr. Speaker, the government is not undertaking construction of a new stadium. Otherwise, the answer remains the same as the answer to question 705 of 216.
Mr. Speaker, perhaps the government doesn't construct the stadium, but surely it has a say or the authority to authorize the location of the stadium in the same way as we saw when it was going to be near Europa Point and when the whole of Gibraltar went up in arms about it. It backtracked. The government had something to do with that as well, so it can't just say that it has nothing to do with the construction of the stadium. Maybe not per se, but I'm sure maybe they could tell us one way or another if they know or there are any plans for where the new stadium will be held.
Well, Mr. Speaker, the simple answer is that the government might provide a location for the GFA, and the GFA does its work towards whether they are going to do the stadium there or not. It's public knowledge where some of the other people you mentioned once, Europa Point. We've mentioned last week. This is a decision that the GFA has to take. The government might be able to provide some ideas about locations or locations where they can put the stadium, but this is a GFA-run project. It's not what the government is going to construct or contract people to do things. This is a totally independent thing that the GFA is doing.
Thank you. So, Mr. Speaker, there are no costs or funds anywhere in this scenario being spent by government.
Well, Mr. Speaker, this is public knowledge again about the loans that the government gave to the GFA at the time and all these issues. As far as Gibraltar is concerned, this is a GFA with well-found future projects, which the government has nothing to do with it. And there might be loans advanced in has done previously, but we can assure the honourable lady that this is not going to cost us that we tax their money. The stadium is done by the GFA together with WEFA and FIFA.
So, Mr. Speaker, can the honourable gentleman not give me any clues as to where the current location is being looked at for the construction of a new stadium? Because yes, we spoke about Europa Point, but I believe that prospect was now done with.
The honourable member has already said successfully. This is where the new stadium is now being considered. That is public knowledge, so there is no need for the honourable minister to answer that question. Unless I'm wrong.
Considered.
The word that you said about considered is what should be looked at. This is a site that has been identified as a possibility. There is a due process, including the Development and Planning Commission and all that. All that is in due course. Okay, so we don't have to deal with that now.
Mr. Speaker, I was on looking at the guidelines. One would have realized that an outside broadcasting van can't get into Lasbury, so it's not even possible to do the same.
No. That is not a matter. Who can get in or who cannot get in? Sorry. Mr. Speaker, the Honourable Lady has said that that is not a possibility. I don't think neither herself or I am qualified to say whether it is possible or not. This is where the DFA comes in. They bring their technicians, they bring their building surveyors, quantity surveyors, their architects, their engineers, and everybody to see whether it's feasible there. What the government does is say that this is the location that we have available. Can you do it or not?
Question number 33, the Honourable Eric Yaman.
Mr. Speaker, in connection with government press release 905 of 2015, dated the 9th of December 2015, how many segways have been confiscated by Haitian customs?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, no segways have been confiscated by Haitian customs. However, one was detained, which was imported by a tourist deemed unaware of its import prohibition, and the visitor was therefore escorted out of Gibraltar. On occasion, Haitian customs have stopped visitors and locals who have declared these for duty purposes, and having been informed of the prohibition under the import and export control regulations, have not been allowed to be imported.
Mr. Speaker, given that none has been seized or confiscated, and there is obviously a surge, especially after the Christmas period, in February, is government intending to at least regulate them or curtail the use of them or something to do with it? There have been news on the road, in Main Street, in parks, so either we deal with them. Or we regulate them where they can be used or not, because I think to just allow a illegal item to be used everywhere and not deal with it is creating a problem, and it also creates a problem in the sense that other children see segways and ask their parents, well, why can't I get them? And obviously, we try to explain to children it's against the law, but the children are seeing
the traffic to use that access. So, what's the intention of dealing with the surge that we've had over the last 18 months?
Mr. Speaker, given the Honourable Gentleman is not talking about segways, as a dinosaur of the Speaker, I have an explanation either from the Honourable Minister or the Questioner what on earth a segway is about so that I know what it is that you're talking about.
Mr. Speaker, segway is a brand name. It is a name for a type of vehicle which is a self-propelled electric vehicle. And these are characteristic ones you handle, which you move your center of gravity forward in the way you forward action, and then they're also used in the US by police officers. And the brand segway also means the other ones which were handled not so high, they're slightly lower than this area. But that is a segway. And clearly, the Honourable Gentleman is not talking about this product because a segway is something you won't find. I've never seen a segway in the world today, but I think the Honourable Gentleman is referring to other electric toy gadgets which are coming into the market. They are usually termed something like webways and hoverboards and electric and skateboard that is suited to all these types of the gravity, but that is not the question I'm asking.
Sorry for my confusion, because obviously it's from the press release where there's mentioned segways. As I said, trying to see the electric power cycle, they say whether they have it handy or not. So, with reference to the press release, are the hoverboard illegal imports?
Mr. Speaker, the class of vehicle, the hoverboards are classified, I believe, as self-balancing devices. Now, some of them do fall under the category, and segways are also self-balancing devices. So, the very term, all these types of devices are
illegal input. But because these are being developed at such a fast rate in the industry, it is important to keep track of the products. Remember, taking the brand name, so if any other company decided to produce a type of vehicle and they called it, you know, it was a BMW or a Mercedes or whatever it was, it would be possible to legislate for all of these types. So I think government is aware that there are these electricity. How they're defined is something we need to look at. In fact, we had a recent meeting with electric parties regarding these products, and there was also a meeting scheduled with the ITC, which is staff, and get opinions and see, you know, where we wish to take this in terms of policy.
Question number 34, the Honourable Ellis Yeoman.
Mr. Speaker, can the government confirm whether the cost of the recently refurbished diesel crossing at St. John's Castle has been in addition to the overall cost of the project or not?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, the work to the recently refurbished diesel crossing did not form part of the original scope of work because in the initial design, it was never intended for a crossing to be provided at that location. A temporary crossing was provided at that location because pedestrian access to the adjacent midtown development is not yet possible. This temporary crossing has now been made more permanent and upgraded to serve disabled users. The works were carried out by GKDS at a cost of £4,354.04.
So is it intended that this super crossing would be needed at a later stage, or what is the plan for this super crossing?
Mr. Speaker, with the whole development itself, the idea was that people exiting the car park would walk in a thousand directions through the complex itself, which I believe the intention that there would be some crossing facilities within the complex, which would then lead them straight to what would be focused in this space. On the way into town. We don't know how the project will develop and how people will decide to walk in the future, because it could be that persons parking their cars at midtown development may wish to walk in a northerly direction, and they may consider that when it's time to come. But the reason why the future was not part of the project was because it was never going to be put there. Everyone was convinced that the people would walk, as I said earlier, south and at a certain time.
Question number 35, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, can the Minister with responsibility for traffic provide figures for the number of vehicles clamped during the months of October, November and December 2016?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning. Question number 36, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Can the Minister with responsibility for traffic say how many fixed penalty notices were issued to vehicles for parking offences in November and December of 2016?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, according to the records held at the door to car park services, during the month of November 2016, a total of 2,731 FTNs were issued. During the month of December 2016, a total of 1,582 FTNs were issued. Furthermore, 6 penalty notices. Furthermore, Mr. Speaker, the record of the contractors of the Gold Carbac would be so as follows. During the month of October 2016, a total of 366 vehicles were clamped. During the month of November 2016, a total of 252 vehicles were clamped, and during the month of December 2016, a total of 141 vehicles were clamped.
Could I just ask the Minister to repeat the figure for fixed penalty notices in December 2016? My honourable friend clears his throat for an inopportune moment.
So the amount of FTNs
one for the month of December, 1,582.
Question number 37, the Honourable Kian Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, in his budget speech, the Minister with responsibility for traffic stated that 326 parking spaces have been sold in the Midtown car park. In answer to questions in December, these sales figures had risen to 456. That constitutes an additional 130 spaces being sold. Can the Minister say what prompted the decision to sell more spaces which had previously been available to the public for parking?
To the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, I'll ask this question together with questions 38 and 39.
Question number 38, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
In his budget speech, the Minister with responsibility for traffic stated that some parking spaces in the Midtown car park had been left out. The implication being that it was a small number. In answer to questions last month, he stated that the number of rented spaces was 131. What prompted government to rent more spaces and remove them from public use?
Question number 39, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Can the Minister with responsibility for traffic confirm that the claim made in his budget speech that with the parking in Midtown, the government has provided more than 100 additional public parking spaces than were previously available at the Commonwealth Parade and Naval Ground can no longer be substantiated given the sale of an additional 130 of the Midtown spaces and the rental of further spaces?
Answer the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, the commitment set out in the 2011 Recent Liberal Manifesto permitted the then incoming administration to provide double the number of parking spaces which will be free for residents of Gibraltar. That commitment is more than entirely provided for and complied with. Following the initial sale of 326 spaces, the microstandard Gibraltar sold two more levels comprising the additional 130 spaces as a result of the high demand from members of the public wishing to purchase parking. Mr. Speaker, during my budget address, reference to rented parking spaces, although allocated, are also considered of public use and these said members of our community. Furthermore, the Magistrate has also had a commitment to provide rental parking facilities at this time to meet an existing demand in the area and to provide rental parking for the people who are originally renting at the Naval Ground before they were moved onto the ICT car park as a temporary measure whilst Midtown was being built. Again, Mr. Speaker, the figures quoted in the past have always taken account of rented spaces that existed previously, and therefore there has been a net gain in parking in the town area. Mr. Speaker, space sold or rented have all been sold or rented to residents. In the second sentence, the manifesto commitment is complied with, exceeded, and something to be proud of.
Because the provider doesn't add up. In his budget speech, the Minister was saying that with Midtown, they weren't providing double the number of spaces previously available, but 100 more additional parking spaces were available to the public. Last month, he effectively stated that one, and he has repeated that statement, that 130 additional spaces have been sold. So of that 100, even if we take the rental and the semantics into whether those are public spaces or not, even if we take the rental out of the equation, that means of the more than 100 spaces that were previously available to the public, over and above those that had been available at Commonwealth Parade and at the Regal House car park, 130 spaces have been sold since that point. So clearly it is not possible that we now have double the amount of spaces that were previously available. In fact, the maps would indicate we have fewer spaces available to the public than were previously available to the public to access in their daily commute.
Mr. Speaker, a sold or rented parking space does not mean a lost parking space. It is still there for members of the community. And in fact, it is the members of the community that have not been sold outside to people outside of the Gibraltar. People who are residents of
clearly, without conducting orders of specifically who has been sold a parking space, it's not possible to determine whether all those parking spaces have gone to different individuals, whether parking spaces have gone to multiple individuals. However, the math remains, as I've stated, there are fewer, and it is the minister who made the claim, not I, the minister who made the claim, that there were now more than 100 more than the total of that of the car park, more spaces available than were previously available at the car parks of Commonwealth Park and Naval Ground. To my recollection, certainly the ground floor of Naval Ground and the entirety of Commonwealth Park were public spaces, free public spaces, that could be accessed on a daily basis. They weren't old spaces and they weren't rented to anyone. We're now in a position where the minister has rectified or adjusted the figures last month that he made on his budget speech, because we asked questions last month on the new situation in this scenario, and it seems that he claimed that in his budget there were 100 spaces more than were previously available cannot be substantiated because they sold 130 of those spaces.
Speaker, there are 1,000 spaces within the car park. There were 356 spaces, I recall, in the Commonwealth car park. Clearly, these parking spaces are still being accessed on a daily basis by those who have rented, who have purchased the purchase, or members of the public with the means of their 20,000 cards managed to access public spaces for free. I mean, I think it's clear mathematics that what we had there before, the park, the great park, it was built, with 356 foot, 1,000 spaces have been built. I mean, I don't think anyone can dispute that. What was the decision to release more parking spaces as well back to the government?
It was a decision, and it was the government in the form of the president in the question that made the decision.
Speaker, would I be correct in surmising then that the company that was actually selling the car parking spaces and issuing the leases was in fact controlled by the government?
No, Mr. Speaker.
Speaker, well, perhaps Mr. Speaker could clarify to the benefit of the House how it is that he makes the decision for more parking spaces to be sold to the public. And yet, I presume from the answer given is that the benefit of the revenue of the sale of those parking spaces is not the truth of government. Is that correct?
That is not correct, Mr. Speaker.
And if you could perhaps the Chief Minister for the benefit of my sanity would explain to me exactly how this structure works.
The company that's doing the sales is not controlled by the government. It's the government's agent. And it sells on behalf of the government, and therefore the revenue accrues to the government through its agent.
Question number 40, the Honourable T.N. Hammond.
Mr. Speaker, is the government continuing with its commitment as set out in the budget speech of the Minister with Responsibility for Traffic to provide funding this financial year to the garage and workshop for new equipment, and also that the garage and workshop will continue to provide a service to maintain the fleet of government vehicles, including the refuse collection vehicles?
Answer the Honourable the Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Yes, Mr. Speaker.
Mr. Speaker, is the Minister in a position to say whether that will continue for the next financial year, bearing in mind the request for expressions of interest that was put out reference to government's vehicles?
and speak of the future of the garage and work that is currently under review and is being considered with the union, especially in the context of the advertisement of a special interest in respect of the government's legal fee.
Question number 41, the Honourable T.M. Hammond.
Can the government provide the reason for the diversion of the water bill at Camp Bay and what costs, if any, have been incurred in the project?
Answer, the Honourable Minister for Infrastructure and Planning.
Mr. Speaker, the work to the Camp Bay waterfall are not a government project. They are being undertaken by the developer of the Buena Vista development. The developer is undertaking reprofiling work to rock face to try and reduce the amount of salt water spray that is blown over the top of the cliff and the impact on the development above. The developer has installed pipes as a temporary measure to divert the water flow while the reprofiling works are carried out.
If I may, Mr. Speaker, I'm going to speak up. But from that, I surmise that there has been no cost to the government.
Mr. Speaker, none that I'm aware of, no.
I move that the House be now adjourned to Monday at 10 a.m.
When it is returned on Monday, for schedule convenience, the Honourable Minister, John Cortez, will be answering the question.
Okay.
I now put the question of the House to now adjourn to Monday at 10 in the morning.